Hello and welcome to Fat Chat. Is this the podcast for the Squishterhood? Of course it is. And today we have got another brilliant interview for you. And if that very obvious pun did not give it away, well, then you're going to have to listen on to hear who it is. Mm-hmm.
I'm George from Full of Figure, Full of Bust, and today's guest has temporarily changed my body shape on many an occasion, and she has permanently changed my life as well.
I'm Rifki from Slink Magazine, and I'm really excited to chat to today's guest, as it's very relevant to my interests as being a bride in 2021.
Yes!
And don't forget, make sure you're following us on social media at Fat Chat Pod on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook.
So, who do we have on as this week's guest? Today we have an ethereal fairy tale bridal designer of dreams, a robe and corset making extraordinaire, an advocate for love at all sizes, and someone passionate about giving a dose of compassion to the fashion industry. Yes! She has dressed Helena Bonham Carter, Billy Piper, Carrie Hope Fletcher, and Charlene Hector. She is award-winning. She has shown at London Fashion Week more than once, insisting on bringing her own plus-size models to the straight-size show. And you know what? The best part of it? She loves dogs and margaritas. I mean, rounding her off as a brilliant human. And today, we have Rosie Red Corsetry, believing that everybody deserves to feel beautiful. What an intro. Welcome along, Rosie.
Thank you very much.
For being here, making the trio of redheads once again, now that we're missing Hayley for a little bit. Maybe we'll recruit.
I mean, I'm up for grabs.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I know that you are quite busy at the moment, so it is wonderful to get you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. I've been waiting to see if I can squeeze my way on for a while, so I am chuffed.
So for those of our listeners who, you know, sadly don't know who you are yet, but obviously by the end of the show will, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you started in the industry, and were you always really interested in creating the kind of beautiful, I mean, essentially works of art that you create?
Oh, thank you. It's always really lovely to hear that. I am Rosie, and I have been running my bridal business now for about 5 years, and I adore what I do. I've got a background in costume design, and I did my degrees in costume, and I absolutely loved it. I loved the idea of taking a story and an idea and creating something beautiful. And I personally find high street clothing really boring, especially from like a design perspective. So being able to do costume was great. But my way into the industry was a bit of an odd one, because when I graduated, I had a brilliant degree. I'd done all of these internships, and I ended up actually getting a job for a charity because I desperately needed money over the summer. I'd applied for about a zillion different jobs all over the world. I applied for jobs in Canada. I would have gone anywhere. And while I was working this job in a warehouse and in retail, it was quite a time. It was quite character building. Unbeknownst to me, my dad had written to Helena Bonham Carter and said, my daughter would love to dress you. And we hadn't heard anything back. And I remember feeling particularly rubbish one night in the car, and my mum was like, your dad did write to Helena Bonham Carter too. And I was like, great, another thing that hasn't worked out for me. Brilliant. But I did. I heard back a few months later and ended up going to her house and fitting her. And it was incredible. She's always been my style icon. And I think the fact that I suddenly was like, oh, I've got my name in the back of Vanity Fair. I've been named as Helena Bonham Carter's new favourite designer. And I'm with Burberry and Valentino, and I'm working off my parents' kitchen table. I probably should get a collection together. So that's how it really started in the beginning.
That's such a great story. And also props for your dad for like, yeah, you know, being cheeky, taking that initiative. I know.
Honestly, and I feel like I have to, my dad is brilliant. My dad's really supportive, and he gets all the credit for writing that letter. But my little mum is at every photo shoot. She makes red velvet cake, and we have rosé wine at every photo shoot. Very on brand. And yeah, it would be nothing without her support as well. So
these sound like the best photo shoots ever. I feel like mine now, you know, pale in comparison. I'm going to have to start upping my game.
Rifki, as if there's not alcohol on your shoot.
Yeah, okay, fine.
So you spoke about studying costume at uni. Yeah. Tell us a little more about that. What was that like? Is that where you sort of were like, this is what I want to do? Is that where you really sort of fine-tuned your brand?
No, I totally didn't know I was going to have a brand at that point. I think in my head I was like, maybe in my 30s or my 40s I'll go off and have my own label. Maybe that's something I can do in the future. But I was really adamant I wanted to work in TV or film or theatre. And I loved university. It was the best time ever. But one of the modules we did in my second year was corsetry. And the corset designer who came in, she bought a rail of all these different size corsets with her, which was an eye-opening thing as well, because normally in fashion, you do just get your straight size 10, size 8. And I could try a corset on, and I was like, this is the best piece of clothing I have ever worn. I need to learn the magic. I think I managed to squeeze about 6-inch reduction off my waist, and I looked in the mirror like, look at you. And from that point, I just thought, if I'm going to go into this industry, I need something that I can specialize in. Mm-hmm. And I did all the work to do corsetry. I did internships, I read books, I just made stuff and got on with it. Yeah, I loved university, but I didn't know that I was going to have a brand at that point at all.
Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome though that your brand is obviously focuses around corsetry, but it's something that you like and you like to wear, and it's part of you. Like, I sometimes think some people, you can tell what their brand is from them, and you're definitely one of those people. You embody your brand, you are your brand, you're in your some of your logos and artwork and like in a corset and stuff, which I just think that puts a bit more faith in the brand. It's like, this is a work of passion. Like, I'm supporting someone's passion and their love and interest in something, and I think there's something really beautiful about that. So
thanks. I think it's very Leo of me to be like, put my face on it, like
getting the star sign chatting, are we?
Like, look at me. It's really important to me. And I think as well, I don't know, it's a weird analogy, you can work and have a brand that isn't anything to do with you. But I think the fact that, being plus size myself, I do understand plus size bodies. I personally feel better than somebody living in a straight size body, which is maybe a bit controversial. But there are elements...
Not on this podcast, babe.
Well, there are elements like... I mean, I see a lot of naked people. That's a big part of what I do. Not just in my spare time, my hobby. And there are people of all body shapes and all body types that have to feel comfortable getting undressed in front of me. And you don't have to wear anything to flatter you. But there are people who specifically come because they want a style to flatter them. And I think because I've dressed a body for years that is bigger and also taller with bigger boobs and everything, I've just got more experience of a range of how that person might want to feel. And it's, just a general awareness, I think, is really important.
So going back a little bit to university, so I also went and I did fashion design, so I
kind of
understand where you're coming from when you throw yourself into your course. And like, I often sit and think like, oh gosh, I wish I could go back to university, and it's such an amazing time and everyone's always really passionate and you're in this really creative environment. And I think even from kind of seeing my friends, you know, people get certain opportunities, like you had the amazing opportunity with Helena Bonham Carter. And I think it's so easy for then people think, well, yeah, you had that and then you got a brand and that's just how it works. But tell us a little bit about the sort of the difficult side. Like, was it difficult to transition into a brand from that moment to kind of build the brand, like all the extra work that goes into it?
100%. I work my ass off. Like, I work really, really hard. So my degree was fashion design with a pathway to performance. So in my final year, I specialised in costume design. And I did. I got a first class degree, which was epic. I did a lot of work experiences, which was impressive because I was drunk for the majority of my second and third year. So... yeah, quite proud of that as well. But I think creating a business and a brand is difficult anyway, and they are two separate things. So I think creating a brand is really about your identity and your style and your personality and building and curating a following and a story that people can go along with. Whereas a business is about money in versus money out. And to have a successful business, you have to be bringing more money in than you are spending. It's as simple as that. But I think some businesses fail because they don't have that brand identity. And I think the internet plays such smoke and mirrors on us, because a lot of brands you see and you're like, God, they must be doing incredibly, like, they're not making any money, not a bean. So I think it's been massively difficult. There have been loads of hurdles. In the beginning, I was catfished by somebody really badly who said they were marrying a famous person, and they weren't. And it went down this whole rabbit hole. Yeah, they then pretended to be their daughter, and they're like, it was insane. There have just been lots of interesting things.
Hurdles. This Loads is the thing hurdles. That people don't see, isn't it? It's like you see someone who's doing really well. It's that like duck on, like with the legs under the water.
Yeah.
All you see is the highlights on social media and you're like, oh my God, she's made something amazing. Oh my God, she's dressed someone amazing. That's another beautiful photo shoot. She's got another bride.
It's like, absolutely.
Actually, you know what? Like I've heard from you where you've spent money on fabric that hasn't quite worked out, or
yeah.
that company's gone under, or like you say, that bride catfished you, and like all of the things that like you have to have the passion to want to keep doing it. You have to have the business acumen to be able to make it successful.
Absolutely.
And the two have got to feed in. But like, yeah, all of the stuff that people don't see, that you're trying to keep this brand going
yeah.
despite all of these hurdles and all of the things that make you like, I just don't want to do this anymore. This feels really
yeah.
hard.
I think it's hard when you do something creative as well to be able to switch between being creative and being a business person, because you do have to do both. So I managed to get my tax return done last week. Whee! Which is great.
In the nick of time.
But it's really hard to go from, oh, let's put this fabric here and let's do this here, to hold on, I'm on Excel again, mm-hmm. and to getting in that headspace. So that's quite a difficult thing to turn off when you're creative and when you're a business person. I find that a lot. And also, I often have a bit of an existential crisis that I don't have a hobby, because I feel like sewing for a lot of people, or beading, or all the different things I do, a lot of people do as a hobby. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I've been doing it from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m, the last thing I want to do in the evening is go and do a bit of sewing. I'm always going like, what's my hobby?
Yeah, but it's nice that you almost think of your work as a hobby in a way as well, because it means
yeah.
you've still got that, you're still finding the joy in it, because I think a hobby is something you find
yeah.
the joy in, and it doesn't feel like work. And it sounds
yeah.
like you've got like a really dreamy job. You've got the skills to have done it, and then the headspace to still enjoy it. So that's amazing.
Thanks.
Obviously, you are predominantly, I would say, a bridal designer. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. you do all these amazing like robes and corsets and things. But you are bridal wear. You make
100%
things for real brides, which for me, that's so scary. Like, having gone through the process of getting married and actually having had you pimp out my wedding dress a little bit, like the thought of being involved in someone's wedding scares me, because it's like the one day where, first of all, they hopefully will only do that once, maybe twice. And also, like, they like brides become this like different being sometimes, mm-hmm. because they're so stressed and they want it so perfect. And like, you spend, for some people, your whole life dreaming of this one mm-hmm. day and how you'll look and what it'll be like, and it all goes into that. So I have to ask, were you nervous when you first decided to work with brides?
The thing I get nervous about more than anything, so I do quite a lot of work with international brides, so I think mm-hmm. Americans are quite big on their British designers. And the time I'm most nervous is when I send something off and I'm like, please don't get stuck in customs, because if this misses your wedding date, oh, it's going to be awful. But I think as a person, I'm somebody that I'm very thoughtful, but I do just crack on with stuff. I'm not somebody that will sit down and overthink and overplan every little detail. Maybe in some areas of my life, but definitely not in my work. Mm-hmm. And as time goes on and you realize you haven't disappointed anybody and you've had loads of success stories and you can do your job pretty well, it just builds that confidence even more. So I think that's a really important thing to do. Of course, there's a moment maybe before brides come in and you're like, oh, please love it. I always say to people, if there's anything that you want to change, please don't be offended to say, just tell me straight in a fitting, because if they then go away, it's going to be weeks to sort the issue out. So honesty is really, really important. And I do separate my work from me. So if somebody doesn't like something that I've done, I don't think they think I'm a terrible person. They're two different things.
So as someone that's getting married next year,
Way.
And I'm sure there's lots of people listening as well in a similar boat, or maybe people that haven't even started planning yet because of, you know, crazy 2020.
Absolutely.
What's the process? How long does it take? You know, how does it all work getting a bespoke bridal dress made?
There are three main stages of getting a bespoke dress made. Initially, when people get in touch, I actually normally find out if they are comfortable having a phone conversation or a video call, because you can learn a lot about somebody from talking to them and not as much from an email. And I think that sets off the beginning of the bespoke process really well. First stage is a design meet. Like I say, I work with people internationally who I'm never going to meet. So we do that all over video call or using different like photo sharing tools. But at the design meet, we, if it's in person, we take measurements, try on samples, look at fabric samples, look at everything I've got. I encourage people to touch things and ask about things and to take photos of them wearing stuff, because I hear so many times that brides will go into a bridal shop and they'll be like, no, no, no photos.
Yeah, I had that when I was doing bridesmaids' dresses for my sister who was away at sea for her wedding. They wouldn't let me take a photo. And I was like, what do you think I'm going to do?
Yeah, it just baffles me, because I think you might feel a certain way in a moment, but everybody needs time to process that and have a bit of a think. So the first step is all about getting the design sorted. Although I do collections which showcase sort of different skills, a lot of people will want different elements of different dresses, or they know the shape that they want. But it tends to be all the brides that come to me maybe have followed my work, or they definitely have found my style and go, we just want it done by you. There's something about your work. We want your style. The second, which is the most important stage, is a toile fit. And a toile is a prototype. And a prototype...
Not chocolate orange.
I mean, well. I haven't had one of those yet.
You got it.
Loads of people struggle saying it, actually. I think it's French. But yeah, so a toile fit is a prototype. Your whole outfit is made up out of much cheaper fabrics of a similar weight to the final piece, so that you can come in and basically try your dress on before it's made. Mm-hmm. And that's an opportunity to get the fit spot on. Maybe you wanted a higher neckline, and you try it on and you're like, no, actually, we can go lower. So we chop it, we cut it. It's a very hands-on fitting. For my remote brides, we do a thing called padding the stand, which is where you find a mannequin. And I've got mannequins from the smallest to the biggest they go. And you wrap them with padding. And you basically, by looking at a photo of someone and their measurements, you create a 3D version of them, which is really handy. And then finally, it's collection. So there's no need, or there hasn't been, touch wood for me yet, for there to be an alteration stage. Because it's done bespoke, you're not buying a dress off the peg that then is going to need changing and it's going to cost you £200 to change. It's all in one. And I am quite big on not talking about diets, or because I very naively, I guess, went into the bridal industry not realizing how close the diet industry and the bridal industry were linked. I find it shocking, and I've had some people ask some shocking things of like, should they go on a liquid diet to get into a dress? And I'm like, no. And when I measure people, I don't tell them their measurements. I don't show them. They don't need to know. I need to know. They don't need to know. So measurements are madly important. And when I take people's measurements, I'm only looking at a number. I don't look at it as a judgment. I don't look at it as if someone's been good or bad in their choices in life. It honestly means nothing to me, other than the fact that I need that measurement to be accurate, because I need to then go onto paper and go onto fabric and cut some really expensive materials to make it right. So I do see bodies of all shapes and sizes, and some people are quite nervous about having the measurements taken. And some
sending them, I guess, like your overseas brides. For some people, absolutely, it's quite hard to write that down and see it and what that means in their brain and their diet culture addled mind.
Yeah, I think I'm quite good at putting people at comfort and at peace with stuff like that. I think it's a really important skill that I'm not a threatening person to talk to either. I think definitely people have had experiences in the past that you need to talk to really and unwind, that maybe people who have worked in bridal shops have been a bit unkind about the measurements. It's the same as height. I wouldn't look at somebody who was 5'2" and someone who was 5'10" and be like, well, one of those is better than the other. It's just a measurement to get it right. So yeah, I think another thing really important, and I think the best example to give, is for the robes that I make, which everything is made in-house. I think my robes start at about a 26-inch waist. Mm-hmm. And the biggest pattern I've got at the moment is a 65-inch waist. Mm-hmm. And the smaller one, which does take less fabric, is exactly the same price as the larger one, because that's something, yeah, I really, really believe in that. And if somebody gets in touch and their measurements are bigger than my top waist measurement, which is what happened before, I don't say to them, you're too big. I just made a new pattern. I didn't tell them I made a new pattern, because what would be the point? Like, oh, there just shouldn't be. And even from like a business perspective, I don't see why there are all these customers, if you want to look at it in a really brutal way, mm-hmm. who just want a nice thing to wear. So just make it. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, just do it. Mm-hmm. I think the funniest thing with getting measured, I don't know if I like cry. I
really want to hear this story now, because you two keep referencing it. I'm like, tell me the damn story.
I do have a measurement guide. So when people order, they're called my everyday corsets. They're an underbust corset. And I have a measurement guide. And I do offer video calls with people so that I can watch them measure themselves to check they're doing it correctly.
We've all got our kinks, Rosie.
I mean, that with the naked people all day long. But there was a customer, and I've got the photo, and sometimes when I'm feeling a bit down, I have a little look and it gets to me. There was backwards and forwards with a bride who said that she wanted a corset. I believe it was 25 inches long, right? And to give you some sort of guide, my corsets tend to be 10 to 15 inches long. Yeah, that's just a rough guide. And she said, yep, I definitely this length. And I was like, oh, we went backwards and forwards. I said, please check, because I really don't think that's right. And she said, no, it is. And this is a statement I get from people a lot, is she said, I've just got a very odd body. And I think that's the way people often try and apologise for their body, which totally isn't necessary. But she said she'd got an odd body. It was definitely 25 inches long down the centre front. And I made it after checking multiple times and sent it to her. And she sent me a picture back, and I had made her a chastity belt. Not deliberately. It was down her thighs. It was fully, like, oh, it was next level. And I,
That's only happened once, though, we'd like to point out. Like, your measuring guide and your video calls obviously work. But obviously, I reckon she must have measured, like, she had your overbust thing open. And she measured, like, here, you know, and she measured over the boobs or something and had a long call. I think of when you tell me that story, and I think of it quite a lot.
The thing I find funniest is she had to, like, have a remake done at her own cost as well. But she kept the original long corset. So she never said, so somewhere in the UK, there is somebody with a very long corset. And I just really like that.
If it's you and you're listening,
we love you.
We love you.
You are a top level member of the Squishterhood now.
And how long does the process take, like from start to finish?
It honestly, it's like, how long is a piece of string? It can take anywhere. I ask people to give me 6 months to a year notice, ideally, to schedule a year. But with a beautiful corona, I have had barely any brides this year. And so far, everybody has postponed to next year. I have no idea what 2021 is going to look like for my work schedule. There's always a chance. I've had some people who want a dress last minute. So somebody last year gave me 2 months, which was incredibly tight. But I was like, there's a last minute late charge. And when you're a small...
Because it's also getting that fabric and sourcing all of the it. Stuff and investing your money into hoping that...
Absolutely.
They'll pay it.
So along
as a small business.
Absolutely. Every step of the process, people will pay a chunk of the balance, which again, from a business point of view, helps my cash flow and it helps the customer, the bride, pay.
And what would you say is the best part about working with brides? Now we've established you don't personally find it as scary as I would. what is the best part? Because it could be like the cliche, like seeing your designs in them, but like, is it them feeling good in their body? Like, what is the best like bit? Like that bit that keeps you coming back for more?
Well, I have bills, but no, I'm joking.
Fair enough. Be honest.
I love, genuinely. I even feel emotional talking about it. I love love. And I think it's such a universal thing that people, two or more people, find each other. And it doesn't matter what you look like. Like, it genuinely doesn't. You find two people together and you're like, wow, you guys found each other. And that's really lovely. So I find that incredibly endearing. And I love it. I also get invited to quite a few of the weddings. And I love a wedding. So I go and dress a bride. I love a wedding. And I think because it's bespoke, I do have more of a connection with that person. And I do genuinely care about them, their level of comfort. As much as I joke, it's not just a financial thing. If it was, I would import dresses and sell them. It's such an opportunity. I've had people of all shapes and sizes. And I think whether it's somebody who is 4'10", who hasn't been able to try a sample on, whether it's one of my brides who was a size 34, who basically felt so intimidated, she just wouldn't go to any shops. I do love people and I love hearing that it's made somebody truly happy, because I do think the fashion industry in general can be a little bit dodgy, brutal, unethical, all of the things. And I am the tiniest little pixel of that big picture, but I think I'm making a difference in my own way, really.
Obviously, in order for kind of to give inspiration to brides and to for clients and things like that, you do these amazing photo shoots, and you've done them from quite early on, and you've always, you know, had lots of different body shapes in them. And, you know, as someone who does a lot of photo shoots and has done a lot of photo shoots over the years, like, that's a huge investment of time and money, and especially to kind of make those bespoke pieces for the shoots to showcase what you can do. How important was it for you to have that as your kind of, I suppose, main shop window almost?
I think people are really visual. I think it's why Instagram's my most successful platform as well. And when people are looking for bridal wear, they want to see images. And as much as you can say, especially as a new designer, oh, I could do that, I could do that, until you actually show people what you can do, they're not going to have any belief in that. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to invest in it. And that's what I found working with plus size models as well, is my original collection wasn't plus. It was just standard sizes. I was on a really, really tight budget, which I think people forget. That's quite a big part of it. And I had on my website and everything, I will make this in all sizes, it doesn't matter what size you are. And I had no interest, nobody wanted to inquire or talk about it, because people need to see it. You have to put your money where your mouth is, and you have to take action. And the moment I put bigger bodies outside of the typical model norm in clothing, it absolutely took off. And I thought, actually, I would like to see people. If I was shopping for wedding dresses, I'd like to see people like me wearing them too.
One of my favourite shoots of yours is the one you did with Glow Pinkster, who is over a size 28, I would say. and she's Asian, and she's shorter as well. Like,
yeah.
I have met her. Like, Rivki, actually, the first time I met her was on a shoot for Slink with you.
Yeah.
And I just think that's an amazing move that more brands need to do. It hasn't it hasn't dented your business. You might have had the odd troll making a stupid comment, but, like, the more people will appreciate that more than they won't appreciate it. And it's just the fact that you take these risks as... Yeah. In terms of the work, like you say, a small brand, like, because I know you so well and I've seen your work, you feel like a big brand. It feels like everyone who I know knows
huge.
You, but actually you haven't got the funding, the budget,
no.
the shareholders that all these brands
yeah.
have, and yet you've taken these risks and you continue to take risks. And like we said in the beginning, like you brought myself and also Olivia Campbell, who is a very tall, curvy, plus size mixed race model with a big afro, to London Fashion Week, and you were like, I'm doing it. These are my models. These are my people.
Yeah.
I just think it's amazing that, like, from the get-go, you were wanting to do that. And every time I've worked with you or done events with you, you're like, anyone who wants to wear my creations, who has been a bride of yours, or like your friends or friends of friends who want to do it, like, they are the people who can do it. Like,
yeah.
if I have something in your size, please, I would be honoured for you to do it.
Yeah.
And I just think that is magical and, like,
thanks.
So lovely. Going on from that, you also have people who hire your pieces all over the world now. Like, you don't even have to be at the shoot. People, you do a service where you can hire out pieces and people can have them on shoots. Like, how proud does that make you feel that, like, it's not just you organizing these shoots? People are like, your stuff is so good, I am gonna ship it to my country, slap it on a model, photograph it, make it look beautiful.
Yeah.
What's that like?
I mean, yeah, pretty brilliant. We've got, like, it sounds really pessimistic, we've got to see what Brexit does going forward with shipping stuff abroad. I genuinely love seeing my work on people, because I think clothes are meant to be worn, and you might have something on a mannequin for ages and ages, but it's when you see that movement on a body and you see images come back. And because I've worked with loads of different photographers and hired pieces to loads of different photographers, you just have an array of images, whether it's some sort of, like, grotesque banquet of fruit that somebody's doing, or it's in a forest, or it's in a castle. I love seeing all different people's ideas. It's quite humbling that people want to do it, because I'm very aware I'm not just a small business, I'm a tiny business, really. But I do feel like I've got a big presence. I was recognised at a train station. That
hey,
was a
made it.
I know. I was like, oh, at least my photos look like me online.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's pretty brilliant.
And obviously you have already dressed some amazing people. I mean, like Helena Bonham Carter, who does not love her style? She is immense. If there was someone now, who would you absolutely love to see in your pieces?
There are two people that should have worn my pieces that customs really messed up. So, so Madonna should have worn my corset at a music award.
Rivki's face!
Yeah! Yeah! I had.
Mate, I'd be going down and finding those customs officers myself and have a word.
It was a nightmare. But I'm quite, you know what, I'm really good at, I think, in life, to blow my own trumpet. When things go bad, I'm quite good at accepting it and being like, I could cry and stomp my feet, but I can't do anything about it now, so what can I do going forward? But I was pretty cross. And also Tasty from Orange is the New Black. I should have dressed her for the Emmys. And I would love a piece on the red carpet. I would absolutely love to do that. There are lots of famous people that I'm like, oh, I'd love to dress Paloma Faith and Christina Hendricks. And I just honestly... more than anything, and I know a lot of people are feeling it, but I just can't wait for the world to be normal again, just so I can do photo shoots with my models. It would just be great to be able to shoot again. I've had a collection that I've been working on in part for now a couple of years, and I would just love to be able to get that finished and shoot that.
I mean, I was going to say, you know, Madonna, if you're listening,
yeah.
but she's probably not.
Well,
so.
We can't confirm or deny that Madonna listens to Fat
but
Chat.
But if that customs officer officer's listening, sort it out.
100%.
Rosie, thank you so much for talking to us today, for giving us all of that. It just feels like a really nice feel-good episode with a lot of like amazing information and stories and stuff in there as well. If people are not following you, first of all, why? But second of all, how can they follow you? What platforms are you on? Like, obviously, we'll be linking on the social media as well, guys. But Rosie, what are your handles on all of the things?
Okay, so I am most active over on Instagram and I am at Rosie Red Corsetry. I am also on Facebook. You can also find me on my website, which is rosieredcorsetry.com. I'm occasionally on Twitter, but I don't really like it. So
fair enough. It's a hard place.
So yeah, don't
bother.
And on
your website, obviously, we can see all of your beautiful collections, all of your photo shoots, all of your pricing, your robes, your corsets. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That was so great.
So that is all we've got time for this week. And thank you so much for listening and supporting the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you are listening and pop us a little 5-star review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. This has been a Secret Recordings podcast, and they have got other brilliant podcasts over on the Secret Recordings Network, so go and check those out as well. And as always, we are on social media. We are at Fat Chat Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want to be part of the Squishterhood, then search Fat Chat Community on Facebook, and you can join us there to chat all things Fat Chat and all things related to that.
See you next Tuesday.